capital expenditures set to fall, while unemployment is likely to rise, says economist Karsten Berzeski at ING Bank. He added, "We expect a 75 basis point rate hike from the Federal Reserve in November and a further 50 basis points in December," he said, adding, "But mounting concerns about growth and the housing market are likely to lead to rate cuts from the third quarter of 2023. Amid so many challenges, Washington's fast-rising debt load is a new record no one should be proud of," says Maya McGuinness, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, adding, "In the past 18 months, we've witnessed inflation rise to a 40-year high, interest rates climbing in part to combat this inflation, and several budget-busting pieces of legislation and executive actions." His conclusion is grim, adding, "We are addicted to debt." Also, Global Times wrote, "Large U.S. debt raises concern about more extreme U.S. policies and possible instability." According to a U.S. Treasury Department report released recently, the U.S. gross national debt has surpassed $31 trillion. First, it's clear that the U.S. economy is in far less rosy shape than what many had forecast, with debts now trillions of dollars higher than its GDP, which was only about $23 trillion last year. Starting around 2013, U.S. debt began to steadily outstrip GDP. After 2020, it jumped to about 125% of the year's GDP, quickly soaring up to nearly 135% in 2021. As the rate of borrowing continues to climb, the unhealthy ratio of debt to GDP is expected to continue rising over coming years. On the one hand, the Biden administration hopes to suppress inflation, which will likely drag down the U.S. economy and employment. On the other hand, if the U.S. government chooses to stimulate the economy by increasing debt scale, investors will face greater pressure like rising capital costs, ultimately dampening economic growth prospects. It will be, therefore, difficult for the U.S. government to balance economic recovery and runaway inflation. Bai Ming, deputy director of the International Market Research Institute at the Chinese Academy of International Trade and Economic Cooperation, told the Global Times in an interview. He added, "The U.S. debt ceiling has been raised many times, which to a large extent will also have an impact on the U.S. financial markets, objectively playing a negative role by adding fuel to the fire on top of interest hikes." Global Times added, "The total debt of $31 trillion also indicates that there will be more intense political combat on issues related to congressional appropriations in Washington, which means almost all major federal projects and initiatives will be difficult to deliver, affecting the country's internal economic vitality and its external influence." In addition, experts added, "The last time the U.S. debt was this close to its ceiling, the government was nearly forced to shut down, and the increasingly high debt will also harm the basic operation of the federal government. And an increasing debt burden will naturally raise concerns about the ability of the U.S. government to service the debt, and even the possibility of extremes in future U.S. internal and external policies, such as provoking volatility, unrest, or even a war-oriented foreign policy to shift or even find ways to renege on its debt, which has indeed happened in U.S. history. This sentiment alone could potentially undermine the full faith and credit of the U.S. The Congressional Budget Office earlier this year released a report on America's debt load, warning in its 30-year outlook that if unaddressed, the debt will soon spiral upward to new highs that could ultimately imperil the U.S. economy, according to an AP report. According to Global Times, the current level of inflation in the U.S. should not be underestimated. Coupled with high oil prices, the energy disputes between the U.S., Europe, and Russia, as well as the Russia-Ukraine crisis and other complex international situations, the challenge of a $31 trillion national debt should be considered in the context of the risky crisis currently facing Washington. If the persistent upward trend cannot be resolved, the attractiveness of the U.S. as a global pool of capital and talent will be further eroded, hitting its strength in all aspects. However, it's important to note the reality that the U.S. is accustomed to adopting various policies to deflect conflicts, leaving ordinary Americans and other countries to bear the ultimate cost. The U.S. is not playing the role of a stabilizer in the global economy that a major power should do. Instead, it has repeatedly held others accountable for the consequences when it makes mistakes. As the birthplace of several post-World War's global economic crises, the U.S. could once again become a chaos maker at the expense of economic development around the world, given that the debt, as well as its economic and monetary policies, will all raise the possibility of another global financial crisis in the future. Also, New York Times wrote, America's gross national debt exceeded $31 trillion for the first time, a grim financial milestone that arrived just as the nation's long-term fiscal picture has darkened amid rising interest rates. The breach of the threshold, which was revealed in a Treasury Department report, comes at an inopportune moment, as historically low interest rates are being replaced with higher borrowing costs as the Federal Reserve tries to combat rapid inflation. While record levels of government borrowing to fight the pandemic and finance tax cuts were once seen by some policymakers as affordable, those higher rates are making America's debts more costly over time. New York Times added the $31 trillion threshold also poses a political problem for Biden, who has pledged to put the United States on a more sustainable fiscal path and reduce federal budget deficits by $1 trillion over a decade. Deficits occur when the government spends more money than it takes in the thorough tax revenue. The Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget estimates that Biden's policies have added nearly $5 trillion to deficits since he took office. That projection includes Biden's signature $1.9 trillion economic stimulus bill, a variety of new congressionally approved spending initiatives, and a student loan debt forgiveness plan that is expected to cost taxpayers nearly $400 billion over 30 years. White House budget officials estimated in August that the deficit would be just over $1 trillion for the 2022 fiscal year, which was nearly $400 billion less than they had originally forecast. Biden says those numbers are the product of his policies to stoke economic growth, like the American Rescue Plan. Those figures obscure the effects of the rescue plan, which was financed entirely with borrowed money. Much of the deficit reduction Biden is doing reflects the fact that both he and former President Trump signed laws that borrowed heavily in order to mitigate the damage of the pandemic recession. The deficit has fallen in large part because policymakers did not pass another large round of pandemic aid this year.
Start. Movement. Speed. Living hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners, my dear brothers and sisters from all around the world I hope you're all doing well these days I am Beta at your service and I have the honor to be here at Youth Station And with me, I have my dear brother, Brother Mahdi
السلام عليكم, I'm glad you remember I'm here
Assalamu alaikum. It's a big honor to have you here. Today we're going to talk about something that I'm sure about the fact that somehow came to all of the listeners' minds sometimes. That is somehow annoying. Awareness sometimes makes you depressed. You know what? When you know a lot about other people, when you know a lot about one subject, it's like you are different from the other people. And this isolation, this cut off connection that you have with the normal life will make you depressed. What is your opinion about this feeling? Have you ever experienced it?
How many times have you heard this saying, ignorance is bliss?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what they actually mean. And I don't know if it's a subliminal promotion or they're actually promoting people not to learn. Yeah, of course. Of course. When you're a child, when you're an infant, your biggest concern is that purple toy across the room. And you want to get to that, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And once someone fetches you that toy, done. It's done. Your world is complete, and you know you're not aware of what's happening around you.
Yeah.
Does that necessarily mean that child is safe? If there's a problem that the child faces, right, or he's in a certain danger, right, there's a wall. Is going to fall on this little kid, and this kid's going to go ram into that wall, is not knowing about it. Yeah, he's not going to fear anything, right? The kid, no, he's not. But is that going to change the situation? Is that going to make that wall less dangerous? No, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. So we might, not knowing certain things, might put us in a place where we are in our comfort zone. But is that going to be always like that? Or is that going to be a temporary thing and we're going to fall and we're going to fall hard, you know?
I know, you've just told me something interesting that caught my attention about comfort zone. When you were a child, for example, as you told, because there are many information that you have to learn and, you know, you didn't. You are like, okay, I can ask my father, my mother, and my mother, and my father, and my parents, everybody around me. We tell me what to do and what not to do, and I'm dependent to them. I think this dependency is a comfort zone for you. But when you grow up, because you have to try to be independent, this makes you somehow feel like scared or something.
Yeah, that's when
and
reality
this is the fact.
Hits you.
Yeah. Awareness makes you superior. Not always. I'm not talking about the exceptions or something. I'm telling you that when you are aware of something, it doesn't matter what is the subject. You feel superior, actually.
You feel superior?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not telling you that you are. I'm telling you that you feel in this way, that you're superior to the other people that doesn't know about this matter.
Okay.
You know? And
but like, what do you mean superior? I don't get you. Like, are you better somehow?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You feel better. You feel like, okay, I have more knowledge about something and it makes me feel I can be the one who will decide in this situation. For example, if it was a group, mm-hmm. if there was a group and there were, for example, five persons in that group and they had to choose one person to lead this group, that person would be me. And
yeah, but like knowing more isn't about feeling better, is it?
Your exception.
that kid, for example, if feeling better was the key...
No, I'm not telling you that this feeling superior means exactly that you feel better. I'm telling you it's like walking on the edge of a sword, because you feel superior, because you feel the responsibility of deciding in a situation. That will make you feel like depressed. Because you
depressed.
Think, because you know more, because you have more knowledge, because you have more awareness, you have the responsibility here to act. You have the responsibility to decide. You have the responsibility to answer. You have the responsibility to do many things. And this feeling of,
so
a lot of burden on your shoulder.
Precisely, yeah. So you're saying that learning is going to cause burden upon you. Right. But I still do not get the superior part. Like, what do you mean by...
I elaborate it. I told you that. Maybe superior is not an appropriate word for it.
No. Fair enough. Like, how are you going to feel better or feel good? Is that what you said? You're going to feel good that you're superior or...
At that moment, because you have something more than other people, yes, I think, in a society. For example, when you're in a society...
But that's my concern right now, that people who do not know... they don't know of the problem in itself to feel anything, which makes them more comfortable than the person who's aware, right?
Mm-hmm.
So their feeling of positivity might be more than that person who's aware of a problem around, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you mean from the other side, that person may feel better or something.
Who does not know? The person who's...
Yeah, exactly. Okay. The person who's unaware maybe feel better about other things because he's okay about everything. Okay, it doesn't matter whether what is going around me. I don't care. I don't know. And I don't have any responsibilities.
Okay.
Let's go for a break. Then we're going to come back because...
All right, let's hit a break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Here I am, Bita, at your service, and with me I have my dear brother, Mahdi. We're talking about the burden of awareness, a heavy burden on someone's shoulder.
So I was about to throw a question in there, or like a thought, is when someone is not aware, because I'm going to talk about something more specific, not in general awareness or whatever.
Got it.
The hereafter, or whatever happens in the grave, or whatever you do, you know, is going to be given back to you the way you'd put it here in this world in the hereafter, right? Why do I have to tell people about that? You know, if he doesn't know, he or she, they don't know, and they're okay with that. You know, they're not going to lose their sleep on what they did. They're going to carry on with this life that they have. Me as a person who is religious or who sees these things as facts, the other world as a fact, right? Mm-hmm. And the outcome of what we do as a fact.
So?
Why do I have to tell these people? Because if they're not aware, it's a bit different to the example of the child that we had, right?
I got it. You know, you're telling me that why should I feel the responsibility to make other people aware about something?
In this specific area, precisely. The child who's going to go towards the wall and the wall's going to fall on him is going to be harmed by that wall, which is why I need to tell the child, right? Mm-hmm. Or like hold him back, even though he cries, right? He wants to go to that wall. But these people who are unaware of the other world, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, as we know, is just, right? And if they do not know...
You're talking like we are in the, I don't know, maybe 1,000 years ago. We are in a modern, actually, world. We are living in a modern world that everybody is aware of everything.
No.
Yes.
No. I'm not aware of a billion things on this
world. We are talking about this.
Specific.
This
like,
is specific.
Are you actually really, really telling me that everyone on this planet knows that...
I think you are ignoring the desire of knowing about your life, your death, about death. You know, I think everybody, even a child, even a four-year-old kid, would think about death, would think about this matter, because it's something that you
are... That's a very dark four-year-old kid who thinks about death.
Yeah, but it is. For example, there is a kid who just lost his parents, lost his, I don't know, one of his relatives.
Yeah, yeah, and certainly. Yeah, yeah, that a kid would.
This is like a kind of thing that just warn him to think about it. And no matter in what age, there is one day that you will face this warning in your life and you will think about it. Mm-hmm. And when you think about something and you cannot find the answer, you search for it.
Yeah, that person.
And there should be someone to answer these questions. And when you have awareness, you have to give it to other people.
As long as no one comes to you and asks about them, I do not have to initiate this conversation. I do not have to initiate this topic or initiate telling people about whatever I know, the awareness that I have, for example. I'm not supposed to distribute it or like give it around unless people ask me. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. First of all, we have to talk about the awareness. I mean, the feeling you have about this awareness, not the responsibility after I'm in this awareness that you will gain.
That's where it comes to, because that's what it comes to. Look, me, if I find this out, you know, if I can answer this question, I know how I'm supposed to be when I'm aware, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know a certain, as we had this example, the example of here and afterlife. I see this to be true. I know that this is a fact. And I know that Mr. X does not know about this. And he has not gone through an experience yet, or might not go through in his life, that is going to bring his mind to the question of, you know, hereafter, or life hereafter. But I, being the person who has a certain amount of awareness, am very concerned about that person, because I see that person every day. It could be one person, it could be two, it could be 10.
I got what you say.
Right now, if I tell that person, if I don't tell that person, I know I'm going to put him out of his comfort zone, right?
Yeah.
If I do not tell that person, I'm uncomfortable knowing that I have to tell this person there's something far larger beyond this, wherever we are, right? If I'm telling that person, am I telling that person to get this burden off my shoulders? Or am I telling the person because I see it in their favor and befitting for them to know?
You know, I think it depends on the situation. Maybe there are situations in your life that you would choose the first one. I mean, your intention, your goal of doing something is the first one, and there are some situations that is the second one, you know. But the thing I'm going to tell you is that this awareness actually is a burden. It is. You cannot deny it.
Certainly, we agree.
You know what? And it's not like that this burden will show itself as, for example, a responsibility to answer all the questions of other people. It's not only that. You know, you are just limiting our conversation into that example. And I don't want this, actually. The thing I'm going to tell you is that poison is in everything. We have a beautiful quote in, I don't know, medical sciences, that poison is in everything, you know. And actually, everything in this world is poisonous and has a amount of poison. But the dosage of this poison is something that will determine whether it is poison or remedy.
Right.
You know, it is exactly the same thing about the amount of awareness you're going to receive in this world. So I'm going to tell you that you have to make a balance between your awareness and the pressure of the burden of this awareness on your shoulder.
Right. So
you got it.
You're saying that you learn as much as you can handle? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. No.
Right, but
you cannot,
if I do not learn, the question was that if I do not learn, I might be comfortable, but I am not going to be. Well, I think that's the conclusion, actually, that I'm not going to. If I do not learn, I might be comfortable, but I'm not immune to the dangers of ignorance.
Yeah.
Being aware might put me in an uncomfortable place, but I am prepared for the dangers of ignorance.
Exactly.
I'm equipped.
It was a nice conclusion for this.
Of course, that's me, you know. All right.
Yeah, you're so proud of yourself.
Yep, of course, I have to be. I'm aware.
Okay, you're a prodigy. You know, I do agree with that one. You are telling me that.
Can I have the spotlight and we finish the program?
Okay.
Anyway, thank you.
You're welcome. Right. So the conclusion was that, okay, thank you.
Thank you for letting me have the spotlight.
Yeah, it was a nice spotlight, actually. You know, it was really satisfying. Thank you for this part. And I wish our dear listeners enjoyed our conversation of today, too. So I'm going to leave you in the warm embrace of God. And farewell. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullah.
I have what I have. My love is strong. Because you are the one I call creator, my alpha and omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the danger of leaking secrets. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the dangers of leaking secrets in the Islamic lifestyle. Well, Islam gives importance to keeping the secrets of the others, and this is important because it brings security, it brings trust, it brings reliability amongst the people and the society. But if someone leaks and if someone does not know the importance of keeping secrets, then obviously we should aware people about the consequences and the dangers which are waiting for us in the case of leaking secrets. One of the dangers is that through leaking secrets, we are spreading the evil and badness in the society. So if someone is leaking secrets of the others, he is basically spreading the badness, the evilness in the society. Therefore, we must be aware of that. As Imam Ali alayhi salam has said that jumi'a sharru fil idha'ati wal mu'akhati al ashrar, that the shar, which is evil of the dunya, of this world and the hereafter, they both are gathered in leaking the secrets of the others and having friendship with bad people. Therefore, we must stop ourselves from having bad friends, from having a gathering which is not suitable, which is not good, which is not considered good, and should have a good gathering, good friends. Because it is also said that a mu'min or a person is known by his gathering. Therefore, this gathering is very important. And on the other hand, the second thing which is important is that we should pay attention towards the secrets, towards the personal life of the others, maybe the secret of the country. It might be about the family, it might be about myself, my friend, my brothers or sisters. Therefore, it is necessary to keep the secrets, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the dangers of leaking secrets in the Islamic lifestyle. We mentioned that by leaking the secrets, one of the dangers that we can face is that it will result in the spreading of the evil and badness in the society. This is the danger that we have. On the other hand, if we want to see that, what we can do. So one of the ways of keeping secrets tells that this person, the one who does not leak the secrets, it means that he is a faithful person. It means that he is a God-fearing person. It means that he is a true believer. So one of the signs of those who do not leak the secrets, it's just opposite the evil. Because if someone is leaking the secrets of the others, he does not care about the people's secrets or the country's secrets or the families, it means on the other side, who cares about it? He is someone who have the iman, who is a true believer, the one who has taqwa, who is God-fearing. And because he cares about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and Allah has said to keep the secrets of others, then obviously this person who is a mu'min, who is a believer, he is basically taking care of the personal life, the family life, the social life, and the matters that are related to his country. He is a patriot for his country. He is someone who is trustworthy. And this is the sign of someone who keeps the secret. So when we want to share our secrets with someone, we must be careful. We should choose someone who is a true believer, someone who is God-fearing, who thinks about God first and then he speaks. If we can find someone like this, then obviously it is easier and it is good to share our secrets with such people, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Bushehr is a very special city. It's spectacular even from this height. The traditional and modern textures just next to each other. The Persian Gulf is also great. Beautiful, proud, unique. Bushehr coasts are very attractive. There are Deylam Port, Delvar Port, and Bushehr Port.
Dear passengers, we are approaching the runway. Please fasten your seat belts and get prepared for landing. Thank you.
Oh, look at these old wooden fishing launches. Fishing is still common among the locals. I'm going to visit many places in Bushehr, but my main destination is Saadat School. And the plane is landing. Saadat School, also known as Saadat Muzaffari School, is one of Bushehr's attractions located at Imam Street. Saadat School was founded in 1900 during the Qajar period and was one of the most important educational centers of that time. The school was originally founded by the ruler of Bushehr at that time named Ahmad Khan Daryabegi. Saadat School was the first modern school in south of Iran and played an important role in the cultural development of the region. Nowadays, it is also visited as one of the historical and cultural attractions of Bushehr. The school's building, its wooden doors and colorful windows are very interesting. The Qajarid king, Muzaffaruddin Shah, made financial contribution for the establishment of Saadat School, so the school was also known as Saadat Muzaffari School. Today, there is a small museum in the new building next to Saadat School, where documents, textbooks, and student-owned objects are publicly displayed.
Passengers of flight number 357 for Tehran are requested to proceed to gate number 5 for boarding.
I should take a taxi.
taxi. Thank you. This school came to the spotlight at the first days of its establishment. It had prominent graduates in different fields of study, including human sciences, writing, poetry. It had also graduates from foreign countries, including Iraq, Kuwait, India, Zanzibar, Central Asia, and Persian Gulf states. It seems great. Well, I am now in front of Saadate School. The Islamic Iranian architecture of the school is noticeable just from outside. White walls, wooden doors, mesh windows with colorful glasses. Very special. It's extraordinary. Let me go inside. As you walk inside, you see a very big yard stretching to wide traditional arches. And then there are corridors which reach the classes. It's interesting for me that the light well in all the classes include colorful glass windows. The architecture of Saadate School, just like the central texture of the city of Bushehr, has a startling beauty. It's amazing. This school was repaired in 2014. The repair work lasted for 18 months. It must be a hard job to do. Let me enter one of the classes. Oh, very big and spacious. Good for the students. And look at the old pictures on the wall, dating back to about a century ago. Oh, nowhere is like my beautiful Iran. You have to take a trip to Bushehr and visit this amazing place yourself.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
IRIB English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. Indeed, in the creation of the heavens and the earth and the alternation of night and day, there are signs. The Quran, Surah 3, verse 190. For whom? For those who do not observe? For those who do not think? Of course not. For those who possess intellects. For those who have the power of thought and understanding. Now, this would be all people if everyone used the mind that Allah has given them. Otherwise, from the moment they were born, those with intellects would enjoy a special peace of mind and we would say, we are not of them and we can never be of them. Those with intellects and these are or those. No, when God says possessors of intellect, this means all people. All the people in the world today possess intellects, as long as they use this gift that Allah has given them. Just as if you buy a car and keep it in the garage without ever getting in and driving it. Then, sometime later, you turn the key in the ignition and see that it doesn't start. You inspect the car, maybe it is corroded or maybe the battery has gone flat. But this isn't the fault of the car, it's your fault for not using it and taking care of it. So those with intellects are those who actually make use of the minds that Allah has given them in order to become wise.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
So, who are those who possess intellects? The Ulul Albab. Now, pay attention to how the Qur'an addresses this question, because it uses a very subtle approach when it wants to say who those who possess intellects are and who the wise ones are. If these were ordinary people it was describing, it would say those who possess intellects are those who get ahead in whatever they do, who are never duped in business, in politics, in competitions, in confrontations, in professions. Whatever they do well. But the Qur'an doesn't accept any of these ploys. Because the real value the human being has is not through any of the above, but through his connection with God. Therefore, the Quran describes those who possess intellects in terms of their relationship with Allah. And according to the Quran, those who possess intellects are the ones who are concerned with this highest of values more than anyone or anything else. Those who remember Allah. This is the mark of someone who has an intellect. They remember Allah. Standing, sitting, and laying on their sides. The Quran, Surah 3, verse 191. In other words, in every circumstance, they remember. However, remembering Allah here does not refer to the mystical trance-like state of the dervish that some people crave. Always remembering Allah, always chanting, Hu. But that is not what we mean.
Allah, I wanna thank you. That you've done for me through all from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Palestinians rallied in the blockaded Gaza Strip to express their solidarity with people in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces have stepped up their crackdown, carrying out attacks across the occupied territories and the city of Al-Quds in recent weeks. This while more than 130 Palestinians have been killed by regime forces in the West Bank this year alone, amid an increase in armed resistance. Palestinian resistance factions have expressed their unwavering support for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds.
As we stand here, we affirm the unity of the Palestinian people in the face of the Zionist enemy. Palestinian resistance factions will always stand by our people in Al-Quds and in the occupied West Bank in the face of Zionist crimes. We will continue our armed resistance until the liberation of Palestine.
While Israeli forces increase their attacks in the occupied West Bank, extremist Jewish settlers have been violating the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds under the silent, watchful eye of the international community.
Today we are sending a message of solidarity to our brethren in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. The armed resistance will only increase for the sake of Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds. The Zionist occupation only understands the language of force, and we will continue the fight until martyrdom or freedom.
During the rally, Palestinian resistance groups warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank, while asserting that armed resistance is the key to freedom.
We are loyal to armed resistance and to the blood of martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the sake of liberating Al-Quds. We are fighting for a just cause, and nothing will break the resistance against the Zionist enemy. The criminal Zionist enemy has committed crimes against the Palestinians in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank, and it will pay for the crimes.
Palestinians say they want the occupied West Bank to be part of a future independent Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital.
People here vow to utilize all forms of resistance to defend Al-Quds against Israeli aggression. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Earlier this month, Brussels approved the eighth round of sanctions on Russia over the conflict in Ukraine in an attempt to deprive Moscow of billions of euros in revenues from selling products in the European Union. In a previous round of sanctions, the sixth, Brussels had approved an embargo on Russian seaborne oil that will come into force on December the 5th. This punitive measure will severely affect the Izab refinery, located on Sicily Island in the south of Italy. The refinery, owned by the Russian multinational energy corporation Lukoil, used to buy about 40% of its feedstock from Moscow. Due to the embargo, the plant could shut down in a few weeks, leaving thousands of people jobless.
These workers have been on permanent employment contracts for many years. They are very worried about what lies ahead. A closure of the refinery would reverberate on the region's satellite activities, affecting about 10,000 workers. We have received assurances from the new government that a positive solution will be found.
Although Lukoil was not singled out by EU sanctions, the ISAB plant, which accounts for around 20% of Italian refining capacity, has been forced to rely solely on Russian oil since international banks are no longer providing the refinery with credit to buy oil from alternative suppliers.
Per quanto riguarda queste sanzioni sul petrolio,
EU financial sanctions usually contain derogation provisions which allow competent authorities to authorize activities that would otherwise be prohibited. These provisions should be immediately applied to the ISAB refinery case. This embargo on Russian oil will only have the consequence of further damaging the EU's energy market.
A last shipment of Russian oil is expected to reach the ISAB refinery by December the 5th. The Italian government has a bit over a month to find a solution to the issue. There seems to be two ways only to avert the closure of the ISAB plant. Either the refinery gets nationalized and the Italian government is reportedly mulling over this option, or it is sold to non-Russian buyers. Some media have reported that US private equity fund Crossbridge is among parties interested in buying the refinery. Actually, there is also a third option that could work for ISAB, continue the same way as today. But that would imply a normalization of ties between the EU and Russia, an option that seems non-viable at this stage. Max Civili, Rome.
Rohingya refugees in the suburbs of New Delhi are being threatened by a new onslaught against the community. They claim some men have attacked and beaten women and children living in the refugee camp. One of the women is critically injured and being treated in the hospital. Local residents claim refugee children had blocked a narrow road in the locality, while the members of the Rohingya community maintain they have nowhere to go. Meanwhile, the city police filed a complaint and an investigation is underway.
It's the government that sent us here after our camp was burnt down mysteriously. Our children have nowhere else to play or go. This is not the first time we have been beaten up. We don't want any trouble as we are already facing a lot of misery. Our children don't even have the privilege to go to school. What other options do they have?
India is home to some 40,000 Rohingya refugees based on official figures, but reports suggest there are hundreds of thousands living across many parts of the country. Recent expulsion drives from the government have forced many to go into hiding in undisclosed locations, fearing detention, deportation and separation. The Indian government in recent years has taken the issue of these refugees to the parliament, with majority of the members calling them a security threat and therefore demanding their deportation. Rights activists have time and again reminded the administration about their plight, urging them for an immediate halt to any deportation plan. The destitute community is in utter desperation as intimidation, detention, deportation and night raids have become the order of the day. The Indian government calls them a security threat and prone to radicalization. For decades, the minority community faced systematic persecution at home in Buddhist-majority Myanmar. In recent years, the UN has accused Myanmar of genocide after hundreds of thousands fled to neighboring Bangladesh. Rights activists say the ruling BJP is fueling resentment since it won election in 2014. It calls the Rohingya a security threat, while the policy for refugees from other countries remains different. Persecuted Rohingya Muslims are being treated as illegal immigrants wherever they have settled after fleeing carnage in Myanmar. They are now living in makeshift camps as refugees across different parts of South Asia, especially in India, Bangladesh and Malaysia. Activists in India have stressed the urgent need to protect their rights as refugees. They urge the Indian government to formulate a uniform refugee policy to treat refugees equally, regardless of caste, ethnicity or faith.
On the third day of a public mourning in the southern Iranian city of Shiraz, following a terrorist attack on the holy shrine of Shah Cheragh, a huge crowd of people from different walks of life took part in the funeral procession of the victims.
I tell the enemies that we support the establishment and no one can harm it. we will be victorious.
I came to this rally to show that we are united. Iranian people should support each other and stay united so that Iran does not turn into a country like Syria.
At least 15 people were confirmed dead in the terrorist attack on Wednesday, among them women and children.
If you were truly courageous, you would fight in the battlefield, just like what General Soleimani did. But you attack a holy religious place and kill women and children. This is inhumane.